This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're tuned in to the Gangsta Chronicles with James McDonald, Reggie Wright Jr., and Alex Alonzo on the Digital Soapbox Network.
I have a material witness on an aggravated battery with a handgun, and they believe this might be in retaliation to her testimony.
James was very offended at your previous Bomb First interview that you gave, and I know you didn't get a chance to listen to it word by word, but I guess he felt that you stabbed him in the back or something. But you know, did you get any information, any emails, any response to James' reaction to you?
I did, and I wanted to talk to him as well. I don't know if he's in or not.
No, he's not here.
He's not there. Okay, so no, I did get feedback, and you know, like I said, you know, me and James are like brothers now, so there's not too much he can say that can offend me. I don't like offending him. I that wasn't my intent to offend him, but I do remember a conversation he and I had where he did tell me that he has some information that he's privy to, that somebody that was smarter than me and a lot of people that was around that was jotting down things and that he'd be getting information from. And so, you know, if we're talking about the Tupac spitting on people, you know, maybe that's what he read. If we're talking about Vlad, him giving them credit and all of that, well, yeah, I did feel slighted that way because I did introduce Vlad to James, and for him just to mention those two, I'm always just talking about, you know, the white and black thing where we like to always give the white folks credit, but we won't give the black people credit. People told me that he kept it about money and all of this, and well, I don't want to get into it without James being there. But he know I've been like his manager.
Well, you know, I went through your interview with Bomb First, and I hit a few points with him. So one of the points I hit with him was the Tupac spitting, and he didn't really go into detail about that. He just basically said that he always gives you credit. And the second thing was what you just mentioned, not giving you credit in terms of where he's at now, in terms of social media and the podcast. And he said basically he gives you credit all the time. But I guess on that particular interview, he didn't really give you credit. But then the third thing I actually agreed with you on is that he let Vlad slide on the whole reparations tweet from last October.
And he might have forgot about it.
No, Vlad actually brought it up in the interview.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Vlad brought it up in the interview. Vlad cleaned it up, And
okay, good.
And even the, well, I don't think you could clean it up. It is what it is. But James didn't really have anything, no rebuttal to Vlad regarding the tweet the way we talked about it on the Gangster Chronicles.
Yeah, and he and I talked on a Smoke About record. You know, with I can't even think of my name.
Yuck Mouth.
With Yuck Mouth, we talked about it on that as well. So yeah, and I don't want to talk about James without him being there to defend himself, because that's my boy, and I don't want to offend him because he seems to be getting offended on everything I say, and anything I say is out of love with James, you know.
I thought it was just Reggie Wright Jr. being Reggie Wright Jr., to keep it real.
That's all it was. Yeah, that's all it was. I say I call a ball of all the strength.
This call is from a federal prison.
All right, well, let's get into what's going on with you. Are you in the same camp, Camp Atwater?
I'm still at Atwater, and I found out where your boy Lee Baca was. He's at Luna, which is a good one. That's like a drug camp. It's a camp that a lot of the guys that's here been to. That where they go and do what this program called RDAP, where they go and they, you know, they get an extra year off for attending the program, where they learn about, you know, the effects of what drugs do to the community and all of that stuff. And they said it's a pretty good camp in Texas. It's called Luna. This is where he's at. And it's just like ours, just like the one I'm at in Atwater.
I thought the RDAP program was only people that were eligible for that program were drug offenders.
You're correct. I'm just saying that's not the only ones there, but that's what they're big for. It's only about three of them at a camp level, and that's one. There's one in South Dakota, and then there's one in Sheridan in Oregon. That's the three places where you go for the RDAP program. But he's at a camp that's specializing in RDAP.
All right, well, we got this whole coronavirus going on, and can you give us updates on what's going on with the inmate population?
Okay. Well, I just heard the one in Chino, the drug camp there in Chino, California, or Corona, California, really. Narco is where it really is at. They finally had someone test positive there. Here we haven't had anyone test positive, but we're on a semi-lockdown, but we can't have any visitors, not even attorney business. You have to go through hell to get attorney business. They're not letting anyone new come into the camps from any other, you know, coming down from a low to the camp, or you know, they're not even taking anyone off the streets right now. They just shut down anybody coming in. We have no visitors for 30 days. That took effect this past weekend on the 13th. They let a couple of people go. We had one of those parents that got in trouble paying for his kid to go to Yale. He got out. He only had about 2 to 3 weeks left anyway. But his attorney, you know, he had a little money. So his attorney got him out early. And so they're trying to keep it locked down. They're trying to contain it. Fortunately, none of us got it, because once one of us get it, we all will get it, because we in like a military base type setting where, you know, it's 140 of us in here now, and we literally know each other. Everybody knows pretty much everybody. So you're always in contact with each other because you're in that small of an environment.
Are they doing any tests of all you guys just to make sure everybody don't got it?
Anyone new or anyone that comes in, I heard the officers are testing. They not testing them. They just checking them for fevers and stuff like that before they start their day of shift. But you know, that's not confirmed. We just heard that. We have something called inmate.com where whenever an inmate bring up something or say something, we say, "Oh, that's from inmate.com." You know, meaning we don't know if it's true or not.
Now, does the attorney visits being restricted, is that a violation of rights, like under the Constitution?
Well, you know,
this call is from a federal prison.
They didn't even shut down the courts and stuff, so I don't know.
Yeah, they did shut down. L.A. Superior Court is shut down this week.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to open back up on Monday. They can't keep it shut too long.
my wife, she works in the law firm in the federal, where she files a lot of cases, and they can still file, but there's no trials or no type of judge rulings or anything like that until, I think she said, the 13th or the 17th of April. But it's kind of shut down for a little while.
Okay. Did you hear that Tekashi 6ix9ine got a release date, August 2nd?
August 2nd. That was about the time when I don't know if I did it on Bomb First or here, but that was about the time that we figured out. And then he'd probably go from there to a halfway house or to a home confinement, one of the two. He'd probably go to a halfway house for a week or two, and then he'd probably sit straight to home confinement because he should have a nice home to go home to. Now, and that's what I'm looking for as well.
Okay, so you think you think they might let you out even earlier because of this whole virus thing, or is not that serious?
No, we hope. They haven't got to that point yet. If I have some type of illness or sickness, that's how people are getting out right now, and their attorneys are contacting the courts for that. I haven't contacted my attorney because I don't care, but I got something working where I'm hoping and I'm praying that October, September. November, but by August, there's a good chance I may be out here by August the 1st because I have to give me 6 months of home confinement. And I got something working where I might be out here by August the 1st on home confinement, not a free man, but just on a home confinement thing.
Now, I heard you on Bomb First say that you were able to get more talk time, more minutes. How does that work out? Like, does that have to do with this whole virus thing?
Correct. They gave us 500 minutes because since they want us to keep, they call it community, to be able to be stay in contact with the community or your family and stuff. So they gave us an extra 200 minutes a month. And that just went from the 13th of April. I'm sorry, 13th of March to the 13th of April. And so I automatically get 500 minutes on the 16th. That's my validation date. And then the extra 200. So that'd be like 500 minutes from the 16th to the next 16th of April. So I have 500 minutes. So that's why I've been a little jibber jabber on the phone a little much. But I'm already done using 100 minutes of it in 3 days.
Dang. All right, what's the status on your workout regimen in terms of losing weight? What's up with that?
I'm still stagnating between 25 and 27 pounds lost. I haven't been working out like I was when I first came in, but I'm about to start back up. My partner, the guy that I was working out with, got in a little trouble. He tested positive for some alcohol one night, and he was allegedly drinking or whatever, had that alcohol in the system, and so he's been sent to a low. He's in a hole right now. And so I got to find me a new good workout partner at my level.
So how did they even find out that you got alcohol in your system?
Oh, man. They randomly test us all the time. On New Year's Eve, they woke us up at like 2 in the morning. And they have the breathalyzers. And three people got caught that night. But they randomly test us for alcohol. I'd never been randomly tested for drugs. You know, of course, I blew in the breathalyzer. But they randomly tested guys with drugs and everything in here. Yeah.
That's incredible. So they're making that Puno that they be making in this California, the CDC. They do the same thing in the feds?
No, man, we out of camp, bro.
Oh, you guys actually have bottles of liquor.
I ain't saying what they got.
Okay. All right, man. You got 1 minute left, man. Give me some last words on what's going on, what we need to know. What's up,
man? Just peace, and I appreciate you and James and Norman for keeping this going. Man, people, every time I get an email, everybody pretty much telling y'all doing a hell of a job. I heard y'all went to a party at the mansion. I guess it was Busy Bone Party or something like that, and everybody said y'all was looking good. Y'all had a good time.
Crazy Bone.
I wish I was there.
That was Crazy Bone's party.
Yeah, all the bones the same to me. But, man, you know, y'all just keep up the good work and try to keep it alive so when we come home, we can try to take this to another level, hopefully. But like I said, I don't get nothing but positive comments about the great job that y'all doing. And y'all just keep it up, man. Keep up the good work. And once again, you know, to James, if I offended you, brother, I apologize. And I'll call you and we'll talk. And, you know, shit, I know how you are. So I know it's all good.
All right. You heard that James and I had interviewed MC8, and I heard you saying that you wish you was there for that interview because you would have had some questions. Can you get into some of those questions that you would have wanted to discuss with MC8?
Yeah, I would just like to ask how did he feel sitting in the audience at the Source Awards when DJ Quick said, "I'll dedicate this song to my fiance." With the MCA, MCA, and he was sitting there and he pointed right at him at the Source Awards in front of everybody, and there was a big reaction to that. I would have liked to ask him about why did he misspell his name? He took the G out of that holler 8. Why did he, so, you know, how did he come up with spelling his name EIHT instead of EIGHT? I would have liked to ask him, compliment him about his song. You know, I'm off, you know, one of my favorite top 15 songs is Straight Out Menace from Menace Society. I would have, you know, really talked to him about that. And just to, you know, see how him and Quick relationship is currently, which I think they're in a good place now. You know, stuff like that is what I would like to ask. But the main thing would be about the Source Awards and the beef. Also, he was, most people don't know the incident at the El Rey Theater was because of him and his entourage. When the guy, he got beat down and killed, Quick was walking by. He had just performed the song at the El Rey Club and was walking off the stage. And as they was walking by, people in MCA's entourage, which is one of the guys that ended up dying. I think his name was Kelly Jamerson.
Yep, that was Bo, right, from Rolling 60s Crip?
Yeah, and so he was with him when that melee started off. Just asking what he thought about that. What did he actually say to Quick or somebody in his entourage there to make that melee start off?
So MCA and Kelly Jamerson were together at that moment, right before that happened?
I think he was in the entourage with them. Yeah, he was over there in that area. But you got to remember, that was a majority, a red rag party. And so, you know, I'm sure all the Crips that were there were kind of, that wasn't from Long Beach. You know, the Long Beach guys were cool with us, but all the others that, you know, I'm sure they were just kind of being in their area because the party was pretty much ran by red rags.
But there wasn't really that type of animosity because the music was, well, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't the music kind of uniting everyone?
Well, like I said, all the music pretty much that was put out by Death Row was done by Blue Rags. And so Quick was about the only one, and he really was never signed to Death Row. He was signed to Profile. He was just signed to Death Row as a producer. So majority of the music that came out of Death Row was done by Blue Rag.
This call is from a federal prison.
It's hard to imagine that whole El Rey Theater incident, that was, I believe, 1995. We're talking about 25 years ago.
Yeah, the Soul Train afterwards, yeah. Time went by quick, huh?
Yeah, like I'm just tripping. Basically, that was a quarter century ago. So in 1995, MC8 and Quick already had that beef was already in full gear.
Oh yeah, the song "If It Don't Make Dollars, It Don't Make Sense" came out on the Murder with the Case soundtrack, which came out in 1994, 1995.
Yeah, when we did the MC8 interview, I kind of stayed away from all those typical questions, especially.
Maybe but you know that's my part of the show. Yeah. I would have told him, hey, I'm the asshole. I'm the one going to ask you the questions that you probably don't want to hear. If you don't want to answer them, don't answer them.
Plus, he's already he's answered the whole DJ Quick beef like a bunch of times.
Okay,
it's come up.
I never heard it addressed, but the main thing would have been the Source Awards. How did he feel being addressed directly at the Source Awards in New York?
All right, we don't have a lot of time, so I want to get through a few things quickly before this call cuts off. Have you heard about the Nathaniel Woods execution, the guy in Alabama that was convicted of killing three cops, but he actually wasn't the shooter? Has that news made it to you?
No, I haven't heard about that.
Okay. All right, so you did hear that Lydia Harris's lawsuit has now been reinstated.
Yeah, I mean, what does that mean?
Well, it means
they're going to collect the
$107 million.
They never going to collect the money. The money has been discharged. Shit, we never have to pay it. He had a bankruptcy, so it's not on his credit or anything. He doesn't have any assets. He lost the catalog. The catalog has been sold in a bankruptcy, so it doesn't mean anything. It's just there on paper.
So
he would never have to
because Suge has that bankruptcy. If he was to make some money working with Ray J on his movie rights, Lydia Harris would not be entitled to that?
Correct.
Okay. All right. You heard about Harvey Weinstein, Harvey Weinstein getting convicted?
Yeah. You know, I have a problem with women crying rape. 2015, Bill Cosby, all of them crying rape later. You know, if you cry and rape within a month, 2 months, maybe a year of what's happening, but later, I have a problem with it personally.
Well, you and James agree on that, because we talked about it on the Gangster Chronicles, and James said, I don't believe a woman that's crying rape 10 years later.
I don't say I don't believe them. I just have a problem with that. You know, if you can prove that it was blocked in your mind, or it was locked out, or you have to really show some type of estrogen circumstances where it was really affected her to the point where she couldn't even talk about it. But just coming out and jumping on a bandwagon and said, oh yeah, that happened to me too. No, you should have talked about that when it happened.
But don't you think some women are intimidated to be that first woman to make that step, to make that accusation, because they know it's career suicide in most instances?
Well, that's the choices you make. That's the choice you made.
That's the choice they made.
You want your career? Yeah. Well, the choice they made. They picked the career over being violated.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. I feel a little bit more sympathy for the women than you and James do. So, you know, I support that. You don't have a daughter, do you, Reggie?
I have two.
You have two?
I have a 32-year-old, and I have a 22-year-old, 23-year-old.
You're always talking about your son. That's why I asked that.
Not the one that lives with me, but the other two, you know, they wasn't by my wife.
Okay, so how do you think your daughters would feel you saying that?
You know, I'll tell you something that I never spoke on. I hope she don't get mad at me. My daughter came out to us about 3 years ago. Well, a little longer than that, about 5 years ago. Kayla was about 16 or 17. And a guy that my daughter's mother was allowing stay with them, a lady, her best friend growing up. His name is David. His name is David, and he was like 4 years older than her. We found out, she told us that he was molesting her quite a while when she was like 8 or 9 years old. And I never you know, she was older when that happened. When she told us about it, I think she was like 18 or 19. And I gave her the option of how she wanted to handle it. And she chose just to leave it alone. Just got some counseling, and she went to therapy and got some counseling and stuff like that.
Well, in that situation, I would completely support prosecuting that guy 4 years later.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Well, I'm just saying, I've been on that side of the shoe, so what you were about to say.
Well, that's a unique perspective, since you actually been through it, and you still feel like women complaining about it, what, 4, 5, 6, 10 years later, is maybe it's time to move on?
Well, we're talking about grown women. Well, we're talking about grown women versus a kid, though.
Okay, yeah.
The big difference. But she was 8 or 9, and but she was an adult when I asked her how she wanted to deal with it.
All right, so I want to ask you about this other situation. Snoop Dogg just gave an incredible interview to Matt Barnes on this podcast, and he made that claim again that he's the one that helped sign Tupac. So let me play you this clip for a few seconds, and then I want your response.
Okay.
Here we go.
So he was my friend before Death Row, right? So due to the brotherhood, so when he was locked up, naturally I spoke to Suge and was like, we need to get Cuz out, put him with us, because he will make us better. He gonna push me, and he's just the shit, just because we need to steer him. So that was the first successful free agency acquisition that I acquired with Suge Knight as like a general manager.
All right, that was just the other day. We spoke about this on a previous episode of Bomb First, and I think he was critical of Snoop. So, what's your position now?
Well, I would love for somebody to reach out and find Keisha, Pac's wife that most people don't know he was married to while he was in prison. And she could set the record straight and tell how she was the one that called and reached out for Pac. And all he wanted was the money on his books. That's all he wanted. With some money on his book because he felt Interscope was leaving him for dead and wasn't taking care of him, and he was in prison broke. And I understand that feeling because, you know, I know how you got to take care of things and you like to look good while you're in there and have a lot of stuff done, so I know why you get that. And, you know, on the interviews, they even should say how Pop was glad when he came up there. He said people started giving him stuff because they said, oh, okay, you cool with you, you know, you cool with you. And so, because of that, they started giving them stuff. Keisha is the one that called and reached out to Sheriff and told Sheriff to come up there and see Pop. And the conversation went from there. So why? Now, I can't say that Sheriff didn't go to Snoop and Dre, who was his partner at the time, and said, hey, you know, I'm about to go. What you think? Because that's how he talks.
This call is from a federal prison.
What you think about getting Pop on death row? What you think about me going up there and hollering at Pop and trying to get him, you know, on death row? I can see that conversation happening. I can't say that that conversation did or didn't happen. Only one can answer that question, or be sure. But I can 100% vouch and tell you, because I was involved in getting the money on his books, and I was involved in reaching out, making arrangements and flying up with Shiv. To visit. I didn't go inside, but with David Kenner and myself, Big Danny Boy went once. I know Buntree went once. We went up there about 3 or 4 times. And Shiv has never said, this is Snoop ideal. And when Keisha called, I was the one that handed Shiv the phone and said that, you know, that Keisha is on the phone. She want to holler at you from Roy, who was Shiv's assistant that answered his phone call.
So where's Keisha at today?
I don't know. I hear she's a lawyer or attorney or somewhere. But that's who we need. That's who can clear up all of this. And she doesn't even spoke on it about Keisha. There's some interviews out there on Bound First where she talked about Keisha, or interviews where, you know, Keisha made the call and called him. I know people got there where. So anyway, I don't know why. No, Pete's saying that, but he's going to rewrite the, he's always trying to rewrite the story. I know they're about to do a No Limit Chronicle right now, because I'm kind of involved in it as far as licensing some footage and stuff like that I still own. And it's going to be funny to see how they portray that Master P new purchase or assignment of rights. I know black people get mad with purchase, but that's going to be funny because that was all Sheriff's idea. Snoop or Master P had no input on once Snoop said fine to No Limit Records.
All right, man. I think our call is done.
Yeah. So, Gangsta Chronicles, appreciate y'all. Once again, I want to just thank you and James and Norman for keeping it alive.
Call us next week.
I will. Peace out.
All right.
All right, bro.
Perfect timing. That was Reggie Wright Jr. hitting us from Atwater Federal Prison. And that's what it is.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.